Come to the 64th annual OA birthday party. Together, we get better. In person, January 12th through 14th at the LAX Hilton in Los Angeles, California. Meet fellows from across the globe for a weekend-long extravaganza of workshops, panels, special interest speakers, entertainment, fellowship, laughs, and recovery. Highlights include body image workshop, weekend-long big book study, sober eating workshop, keynote speakers with unique stories, dance party and comedy show, yoga and meditation, meetings and meetups for LGBTQIA, BIPOC, Spanish language, young people, and AAPI members, plus a boutique where you can shop till you drop. Registration is now open at oabirthday.com. Staying the night? Book your room now at a discounted rate through the oabirthday.com website and act fast because rooms sell out quickly. There is a solution. You'll hear from speakers who have various versions of this disease who live happy, joyous, and free. Because together, we get better.
Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at oalaig.org, where you'll find several speaker feeds with over 800 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep the special service active. The opinions expressed on the Light a Candle podcast are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Janet Z. Yay.
Thank you. Hi, my name's Janet Z. I'm a compulsive overeater and a 100-pounder. Hi, you guys. Hi. I see some valley faces, too. I am... Is that better? Okay, great. I am so grateful to be here and to have a life at all. And I do bring my calling cards with me when I speak because I have had a miraculous transformation in my body and my life. And here is the first picture I'm going to show you. And here is the second picture. And I know that it's not the camera angle. There's somebody I've cropped out of the picture who is normal sized. And I came to Overeaters Anonymous in January of 1980. And I was here for 14 years. I strung a little bit of abstinence together, and I kept coming back no matter what. But I was practicing a food plan. I wasn't practicing a program, per se. And that food plan was not working for me. And I thought, OA doesn't work for me. And that's the twist of the mental twist that precedes the fall. And what I can tell you is I had a lifetime of being told what to eat, how to dress, what to look like, and my mother's greatest fear is that I wouldn't be thin enough to attract a mate, a husband. Well, let's see, it's 2023, and I have been married 17 years to my third husband, and there were two I was engaged to that I broke off and two that I said no to. So, Mom, I don't think you had to worry too much. But, you know, it was all about if you just lose some weight. It started when I was 15 pounds overweight as a teenager, and then I started sneak eating because everybody was staring at me and watching me like a hawk, and I used to hide candy bars in the hamper in the bathroom. We had five people in two bathrooms, and I would, before everybody else got home, I got back from school sooner than anyone else, and I would, you know, stuff the candy bars midway down, and then after dinner, which was always very tense, I would go in there and I would, you know, get my medicine. And I didn't have the words, I didn't know that I had no coping skills, and the world felt too close to me, and the food gave me that feeling of, just for a second. And I chased that moment for years and years. In 1994, I hit 200 pounds, and I never thought that would happen. And then I thought, well, this isn't working for me. Let me just take a step back. Let me think about this a minute. 20 years. 20 years. I don't know what this is. 350, 400? I don't know. I don't know what this is. And I didn't believe, I was happy to tell you, I didn't believe in the disease model of 12-step anymore. And thankfully, everything I tried didn't work. And you name it, I tried. I didn't have my jaw wired, and I don't think that I had the pregnant mare's urine shots. I don't know how I missed that one. And I even went to the Schick Center where they would tell you to eat a Twinkie and then shock you while you did. And then when I called them to tell them that their method didn't work, they wouldn't give me my money back. So, you know, eventually my doctor, in those 20 years, my doctor came to me and he performed an intervention and said, basically, you're not going to make it. You know, one of your heart ventricles has doubled in size, and I had COPD, and I was having sleep apnea so severe I had to stop driving. And he said, you know, I think that you should go through the education department for weight loss surgery. And I said no for 2 years, and then he said to me, I don't see you coming up with another solution. And so I did go through that education program, and I had that surgery. Now, that surgery is an outside issue. OA has no opinion on it. So I'm just telling you my experience. It did not fix what was wrong with me. It gave me rapid weight loss and a year of no appetite, which was glorious, I will say. But when it came back with a vengeance. And then I struggled for 9 years. I went up 25 pounds. I came down 25 pounds. I went up 25 pounds. I came down 25 pounds. Never having peace. And I was lucky enough to have a moment of clarity in December of 2014. Let me get the numbers out of the way. I'm down over 135 pounds from my last known weight, more than that from this. I celebrated 3 years of abstinence on October 19th, just a month ago. And I'm so grateful. But when I had that moment in 2014, I was going to go out and buy some, you know, penny candy at the 7-Eleven, and it was a very dangerous time in my neighborhood. There was a guy out there who was, like, slashing people in parking lots and bus stops. They called him the Reseda Slasher. We had our very own slasher. And I was going to go out there and get some more candy because I didn't think I could make it till morning without more. And I had that moment of clarity, and I got on my knees, and I reached out for a God that I did not believe in and said, basically, I don't believe in you, and I'm desperate for help, and if you exist, I really need some help. And there was a moment and a breath, and there was a certainty that the obsession had been lifted. And I took off my shoes and put on my pajamas and went to bed. And because it was 11:30 at night, and I didn't know anyone to call. And in the morning, I called the one person whose phone number I had that I knew was still in some 12-step food program. And I didn't care which one it was. Whatever she was doing, that's where I was going to go. And I called her and said, you know what? I have been struck with abstinence, and I cannot afford to lose it. Can you help me? And she said, yes, and meet me at this 7:30 Studio City meeting on Whitsitt this Sunday, and call me every morning until then. Opened my mouth to say, I don't get up till 8:30 on a weekday, so I kind of, and I opened my mouth and said, okay, I'll be there. And I have been a morning person ever since. I had a career in property management that I could have gone the limit with if I could have gotten up at 5 in the morning. And I spent my entire career battling getting up and then stressing about composing the reason why I'm going to be late. And what I didn't know is that I have adult ADHD and also an outside issue, but it is a particular meaningfulness to me because the 5 years prior to having that moment, I had been unemployable. I had been applying for permanent disability, physical and mental. I was suffering from depression and anxiety so great that I couldn't leave the house unless it was with my husband or one of two friends. And I had a little eBay business where I scraped some money together, and the post office was like 4 or 5 blocks away, and I had to pay somebody to take my packages because I couldn't do it. And right thereafter is when I got my diagnosis, and within a couple of weeks of being treated, I had that moment of clarity of, oh my God, I have spent 20 years of my life praying that OA was not my answer. And so if I have any message today, I mean, I'm going to talk about the big book, but if I have any message today, it's that it doesn't matter how long you've been here. It doesn't matter if it's your first meeting. It doesn't matter if you're struggling right now. I believe with all my heart that recovery is possible for each one of us, and that all we have to do is just not quit. Don't quit before the miracle, they say. I say don't quit before your miracle. And those words come at a large price. I had a lot of life during those 20 years, but a lot of chaos. And so I came back, got a sponsor, worked the steps, studied the big book. I swear the doctor's opinion was not in that book until December of 2014. I must have read it 100 times and did not get that I have some feedback. Thank you. That I actually have a disease, and that what it is it's an obsession of the mind combined with an allergy of the body. And there are certain foods and certain ingredients eaten in combination that set off the phenomenon of craving. And that starts the obsession. And it's a vicious cycle. And that I was not terminally unique. And that description of an alcoholic fit me to a T. I ceased to be a victim the day I finally heard that. I finally got that it's a disease, it's no one's fault, there's no one to blame, but there is a prescribed method of arresting the disease, and that is the first 164 pages of the big book. And I have read and used a lot of the OA literature, and I think that they make really good tools. But when I go and get medication for a cold, you know, I don't want the generic. I want it straight from the maker. And I wanted to know what it actually said in those first 164 pages. And then I went back to OA literature and said, oh, I really can identify in with the food here. I really can identify in. And what my sponsor did was have me, I did not do a rapid working of the steps. What I did was I gave away my fifth step before my first birthday. And when I got to the fifth step and got to the end of the fifth step, I had a long list of people I owed money to, people, institutions, places that I owed money to, because I hadn't worked in 5 years. The first thing that they came and took was my car. And then the second thing they did was, oh, you've got a repossession on your record. Your interest rate just went up to, you know, whatever it was, something that seems ridiculous now, like 16% would be low. But like everything went up, and my finances were a mess, and my $3,500 worth of debt became $10,000 almost overnight. And what I did was see this page full of financial ruin and think to myself, oh, there's a 12-step program for that. And I took that to another 12-step program, and I set about making amends. I did my list. I vetted it with my sponsor, and I started to repay my debt, and I started to pay off my creditors, and I started to pay attention to cause and effect, because I have not a reliable car. I have, you know, if something went wrong, I had no credit to get an apartment, and they even ran my credit in order for me to get a part-time job at the OA office. And so that indicated that it was... When I saw it on paper, it indicated that there's a bigger problem here than just, you know, oh, you know, I was confused or lazy or whatever. There was a real problem there. So I went and took that over there. And then what I did in OA was focus on how do I live in the moments than when my character defects are up and glaring and in my face and maybe only in between my ears. And how do I learn to have a more peaceful existence within myself? And the answer for me was prayer, meditation, writing, sponsoring, being sponsored. Doing all the things we do as if our hair were on fire when we get here and we're desperate. And the weight did come off slowly. It took me a year and a half. I lost like 2 pounds a month or something. And then the pandemic hit. And I thought I was doing great. And I was going to meetings. We're all going to meetings. We're all on Zoom. We're all, you know. And then I went to put on some real clothes. And my jeans didn't fit. I mean, they just didn't fit. And I knew that. And I had that moment of clarity where my jeans didn't fit. And I went to a workshop, a pre-lapse workshop. And I heard this woman talking about the first step, and she was talking about it in terms of, it talks in the 12 and 12 about alcohol, now the rapacious creditor, you know, basically has us in its clutches, and we are powerless. That is, you know, that is the picture of you know, powerlessness. So I have this dilemma. And I forced myself to get on the scale. And I was up 21 pounds. And I called my sponsor crying and said, I'm up 21 pounds. And she said, okay, let's talk about it. You know, like, how did that happen? And how did you not know? Well, my stretch pants were fit really well. You know, I thought I was doing fine. And so she said, how do you reconcile that with the OA definition of abstinence, which is working towards or maintaining, abstaining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. And she said, how do you reconcile that? I said, I don't. So this is where I draw my line in the sand, and that was October 19th of 2020. And it was like another honeymoon. And I found an exercise that I love. And I started to like occupy my body maybe for the first time in my whole life and be responsible for my aging. And this all came about because I was willing to look at my life as as a whole. And it started me, like I said, on a whole new honeymoon, you know, working the steps, going back to the steps, doing a fourth step, getting resentments out, having clarity about, they say in this program, there's three kinds of business, my business, your business, and God's business, and really sorting through that, things that I thought I had aced before. And it had such a turnaround in my life, I can't even tell you. What time is it? Okay, great. So what happened for me was I had a freedom, and I had a connection that I had lost track of. And when I was able to meet with my fellows and be in the rooms and get face to face again, there was so much joy in that. So much joy in that. So I want to tell you a little bit about my higher power, because I feel like he hasn't been the hero of the story, and he really is. And that is that I believe in a malleable idea of God, and it's something for me like between the God of Abraham and the Force. And what I get from communing is this power. You know, lack of power was my dilemma. I'm powerless over food. Okay, great. So we tell you you're powerless over food, and then we give you, you know, a pamphlet and say, go abstain. So what did that mean? Well, I had to go to a higher source in order to get that that power, and that is only found within. And I have been sustained through some really, really unbelievable times. I took care of my sister for 9 years. She had Alzheimer's, and while she was aware of what was going on, when she was aware of her circumstances, it was a very difficult job. And I said, God, they keep telling me that you're not going to give me something I can't handle. And I counted on that. And she passed away last December 21st, unexpectedly and graciously and thankfully, because she was spared those last horrible years of, you know, an Alzheimer's death where, you know, it's just not anything you wish on anyone. And so I laid her to rest in January. Then my beloved dog got sick and had leukemia, and within 2 weeks was gone, just gone. And before I had any time to really get a grip on that, I fell in my own home. They say accidents happen close to the home. Yeah, well, I was in it. And I fell and I fractured my shoulder in three places and my neck in one. So powerlessness. I couldn't do a thing for myself. It was my right hand. I couldn't do a thing for myself. I was dependent for everything. And food was not even a consideration. I was so carried. You know, I felt so blessed this year. And I've come out of it with a greater joy and a greater sense of optimism. Outside issues notwithstanding, I feel like I'm protected and carried no matter what, and that I don't have to wrestle with the future, and the more I stay in today, the more I am free, because today's the only day we have. And I've heard it said in other traditions that if you put yesterday and tomorrow onto God on top of this one day, not even God's going to handle it well. And so if I just stay in this one day, and if you're new, I don't know if any of this has made any sense, but what I'm basically trying to convey is that once you have arrived here, you have a home here. And everything that I have in my life was given to me freely by somebody else in this program. I was, you know, taught everything I know. It was like my finishing school. I learned how to not interrupt people in conversations because I was embarrassed by somebody stopping me one time. And I went, oh, I didn't know that. I guess I was raised by wolves. And inserting myself into situations where I wasn't invited. And thinking that everyone thinks like I do. You know, I was taught the basics. You know, get up, you make your bed, you make your lunch, you, I do something we call the what do they call, Janet? The four, oh my gosh. It's in another program. So I tidy up is what I do. And when I do the basics, when I do the right things, I can do the next things. And that makes space a sacred space for prayer and meditation. That makes a sacred space for calling my sponsor and having my sponsees call me. Everything that I have today was given to me from Overeaters Anonymous. And the change is just dramatic. My husband does not know who I am. And, you know, I don't just function on a minimal basis anymore. I have a very full life. And one of the things that I've been taught is that we can't keep it if we don't give it away. It says in the big book that there's nothing that can promise any kind of immunity to the disease like working with others and giving this thing away. And I don't know why I'm so inarticulate tonight, but I did engage brain before starting tongue, but sometimes it just comes out the way it comes out. And I want to thank Seppi for asking me to come and share with you. And just whatever your story is today, just know that, you know, you have a home in Overeaters Anonymous, and we do love you no matter what you weigh, what you look like, where you come from. And that love is very sustaining. And, you know, having a tribe, having those outreach calls, staying connected, because it's the buildup of human emotions that make me go to the obsession. And the obsession doesn't make me go to the food. It makes me go to the phone. And And I was taught that here. So I'm going to say thank you very much and stop right there. Oh, I have 10 minutes. Okay. Does anyone have any questions? Lucy.
Thank you so much. Can you talk about how you work your program during the day, how you start off, and how you continue throughout the day?
Okay, great. I get up at 5 sometimes. Oh, I have to repeat the question. Okay. How do I work my program during the day? What does that look like? So my morning is I get up at 5 or 5:15, and I say good morning to my husband. He makes me coffee. I go to my desk, and I have my 3 readers there. And I spend some quiet time, and I have learned to meditate with my husband making his lunch in the kitchen. But it's not my favorite, so I usually wait until he leaves. I have a more flexible day. So I spend my time until 6:30 when I go to a phone meeting. I have my quiet time. I go to my 6:30 meeting. And then at 7 o'clock, I go to a big book phone study meeting that's at 7 a.m. our time out of the East Coast. And then I start getting my sponsee calls, and I bookend after all of that with a partner, a productivity partner, and we bookend our first half of the day because we both are freelance. We're independent. We're self-motivated, and if we don't motivate ourselves, there's nobody to do it. So I bookend with her at usually around noon or 1 o'clock, and then I set the tone for the rest of the day by listening to a podcast. If I don't want to listen to a podcast, I'll listen to some really like world music that is kind of uplifting and soothing, and then in the evening, I have some calls. I have some people that I talk to. And then I spend the evening with my husband. Then I do I do my review, and I'm off to bed. And if I don't stop and bookend, usually things go awry, and I go down a rabbit hole. So it's really a good tool. Mary Pat.
Does your husband ever resent the time that you spend in program or with program people, or how do you deal with that?
My husband resents nothing. I'm holding up my before picture. My husband is an absolute angel. He's 98% perfect. That 2% can be really can bring me up short, let's just say. But he is so grateful for the changes in me and for the God changes in me, and that I don't speak to him in a manner that my family tends to speak to people. I'm the only person in my family who actually has gotten recovery. I have a sister who makes sort of periodic check-ins with her program. And I am so changed that he does not. He really does not. Like, if he has to forge for himself tonight, he's fine.
So he experienced it before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, through thick and thin. I think I weighed 275 when he put a engagement ring on my finger and said he was over it. He was over whatever was bugging him, and you know, that was just another miracle. When I got abstinent and sober with my food, he changed. So, you know, and I mean that metaphorically and literally. I mean, the man went through a spiritual experience of his own, and we respect each other. We have a tiny little house. We live in 660 square feet. And he does his prayer and meditation at his closet, and I do mine at my desk in the dining area. and we're very respectful of each other's practice. Yes.
What does your abstinence or food plan look like, and has it changed over the years at all?
Yes. Oh, what does my abstinence look like, and has it changed over the years at all? Yes, it has changed. I was, my abstinence framework was 3 meals a day, up to 2 snacks, based on need. And one of the things that happened to me that I attribute to my surgery is that if I dip in my protein level, I start, my limbs go rubbery. And so I have three meals a day and 2 protein supplements, no sugar. And I eat high protein because I have to. I have to ingest enough protein because I've got that malabsorption now. So I eat high protein. I eat lots of vegetables. I eat 2 servings of fruit a day, and I will eat whole grain. And sometimes I will say to myself, I don't need to have that protein drink. I'm not hungry for it. And then the still small voice will say, you'll be more than hungry if you don't have that drink. So it has sustained me. In August of 22, I had 7 of these hypoglycemia attacks in 9 days. And my doctor reassigned my food and, you know, gave me the protocol. Now, I work with a nutritionist. And I work with a nutritionist who works with people who are in any food program. You tell her the name of the program. You tell her how many times you want to touch. You know, she gets what we do. She's not like, oh, you know, we'll just have a little and, you know, give yourself permission to have a little. You know, I know that works for people. There are people that works for it, and I am not one of them. And that I'm grateful that I know that. But yeah, you know, I went to lunch today with some people from program, and everybody got a full salad, and I got my half salad and could barely finish it. But I don't have a real stomach, so, you know, I eat appropriately. Seppi.
I'm interested to know what the exercise was that you discovered.
The love of my life besides my husband. Pilates. Oh, my God. And Pilates is an outside wish, issue, and I wish it wasn't. I adore it. And I went in there. What happened was I was trying to raise my leg to wash my foot in the shower one day, and I couldn't do it. And I went to the doctor and said, I can't move my leg. And he said, okay, let's get an x-ray. And they got an x-ray, and they said, great news, it's not your hip. I was like, fantastic. He said, go exercise. So I went to a free class, and there are people of all shapes and sizes and fitness level. And I we came to the end of that half an hour, and we put our legs in those straps and made circles. And I was like cooked. That was it. Where do I sign? And I used to think it was a rich person's exercise, and you know, I had to give up a few things in order to have it. But I go 4 or 5 times a week, and I love it, and I can't get enough. And it's been over 2 years that I've been going consistently, except for when I was infirm. Okay, are we down to the wire? We got 2 minutes, a minute?
Yeah. You mentioned that your family speaks to each other or in a certain way, but you don't, you've changed. Can you talk about what that was and how you changed?
We call that, my last name is starts with a Z, and it's an ethnic name, and we refer to that kind of talk as a Zemelism. And that is where you come into the kitchen and you say, did you really think that that was going to fit there while someone's struggling to put a cup away? That's how my family talked. And everything was a sarcastic joke, were at your expense. And my parents are long gone, and now my eldest sister is gone too. There's only the two of us. But okay, so I just want to say that that sarcasm in Latin means to tear flesh, and it's considered the lowest form of communication, and I try not to practice it anymore. And I try to be really careful with my words. All right, thank you so much.